GSF, 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded July 29th, 2026. Well, there's arguably no defendant within America's vast and populous industrial prison complex more indicative of the current decline of both that country's domestic judicial system and the overall demise of the very concept of international law than Alex Saab, the Venezuelan businessman, former government minister, and geopolitical fixer extraordinaire, is currently imprisoned by the United States, again, victimized as a way of getting leverage on the American case against kidnapped Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. John Philpott is a Montreal-based defense attorney in international criminal law, long active in Palestinian and African support organizations and the peace movement. John, too, took part in the campaign to free political prisoners Mengwan Zhou, the Huawei executive detained in Canada for years, and Alex Saab after his detention, torture, and subsequent extradition to America by Cape Verde. John Philpott in the first half. And what sorry state is the law of this land Canada in? Well, you need look no further than bills rammed through Parliament under the summer recess wire by the nascent Carney majority government to chart the downward path of jurisprudence here, a steep and precarious death spiral for the pillars of our democracy, freedom of speech, assembly, and association. Eve Engler is an activist journalist and the author of countless articles and essays detailing Canada's foreign policy history. He's written a dozen books on the subject, including Stand on Guard for Whom, A People's History of the Canadian Military, House of Mirrors, Justin Trudeau's Foreign Policy, Left-Right Marching to the Beat of Imperial Canada, and his latest is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy. Eve's website, eveengler.com, is replete with hundreds of essays detailing the cognitive dissonance laying between the proclaimed and demonstrable Canada, and it's where I found his recent article, Israeli Authoritarianism Rears Its Ugly Head in Toronto. Eve Engler and the listing Canadian ship of states floundering under fledgling Captain Mark Carney in the second half. But first, John Philpott and Venezuela as abject lesson of the perils in appeasing Donald Trump's America. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Nice to see you. I can't see you, but nice to see you again.
Well, it's my great pleasure to hear you as well. John, for those who may not remember, what charge is Alex Saab facing this time?
I presume it's all had to do with breaking American sanctions laws and money laundering. I assume it's the same charges as before, because he was kidnapped from Cape Verde in 2021, and then with the Maduro government, they got him traded off with some Americans who were held in Venezuela, and he went back as a kind of a hero to Venezuela, and I presume he was sent back on the same charges.
How is that possible? He was pardoned by President Biden. Isn't that sort of a double?
I didn't see it as a pardon, but I think he was released as a trade. I don't want to mislead your audience in this case, because the court case in the States ruled that the charges were valid. The Florida case, I didn't attend, but many of us attended the court case, and I don't think the charges were dropped. I think he was just released. I could be wrong on that, because I didn't verify that point. What I'm shocked, well, we'll get into the issues at stake with the American takeover of Venezuela and what I consider to be the traitorous behavior of the new government or the replacement government with respect to Alex Saab and to many other things, of course, you know.
Yeah, well, this is a hotly contested issue, especially amongst people on the political left spectrum, people that are supporters of the Bolivarian Revolution led by Hugo Chavez, and see this as a great betrayal and a profoundly depressing turn of events. The government, under former Vice President Delcy Rodriguez, now the acting president, has thrown out their association with the ICC, the International Criminal Court. This is something that was going on under Maduro too, but they've turned in what seemed in a move that's been applauded by the Americans and especially Marco Rubio, their Secretary of State. Do you see these things as being connected? Is this just further evidence?
That's very recent. And obviously, the U.S. wants to destroy the International Criminal Court, and they've sanctioned judges. They just got Karim Khan removed as prosecutor. And that's really interesting because I actually personally know the man. And I was not a great fan of the International Criminal Court, of course, because it's been used as a tool against Africa and against countries which stand up to the U.S., like the Philippines, with Mr. Duterte, who is now before the court. In 2021, 2022, Mr. Khan was not too keen on charging the leaders of Israel. But when the International Court of Justice, which is the so-called civil court in international relations, made a finding of potential genocide or plausible genocide, the pressure was too great on Mr. Khan. And to his credit, he laid charges, although they weren't genocide, against three Israeli leaders and against three Hamas leaders who were all, if I'm not mistaken, dead. And since then, he's been vilified, Karim Khan, and he was cleared by some internal investigations. But, and this is a speculation, but I'm quite happy to say it, they always look for things like this, sexual assault, which is such, it's almost like you cry somebody who committed sexual assault, they're automatically guilty. And reprobation, and I'm sure it came from the Zionist forces in the ICC or in the world. I'm absolutely convinced of it. And he's been chased out of there, and this will seriously affect the charges against Israel or the Israeli leaders for the war crimes they've committed in Gaza, not genocide, by the way. So getting back to the ICC, the U.S. wants to destroy the ICC, and so they're happy that Venezuela withdrew, although Venezuela had historically been upset with the ICC because Karim Khan was investigating them and he'd actually gone there about a year and a half ago, and I could be wrong on the date. It was quite a threat to Venezuela, and now they've dropped out. Many African countries have dropped out of the ICC too, but for the good reasons. I don't think the Venezuelan issue is very important compared to the other things I guess today we're looking a bit at Alex Saab.
Venezuela, in their statement, they accuse the court of geographical bias. And it's an interesting statement. They say that it's not a simple procedural coincidence, but rather the reflection of an institution that has put its mechanisms at the service of interests unrelated to justice and the people it claims to protect. This is a statement on on Venezuela pulling out of the ICC. The Americans applaud this and denounce the Rome statute itself. They say the ICC is corrupt and worthless. I think these are claims that until Venezuela pulled out, I would go along with. I think they have been biased. They've been biased against African nations. They've been biased against Latin America. None of the real criminals are pursued. To be fair, I suppose the Americans aren't signatories, but Venezuela did have a case against the Americans, the Venezuela 2 so-called case, against these coercive measures, the sanctions campaign led by the Americans. And the ICC threw it out. They let it sit somewhere in a closet, presumably until March of this year, after the American takeover was complete, after this coup, in any other words. And then they say, oh, well, there's no merit, no reasonable basis to believe that we have to continue investigating this after this fait accompli.
Well, actually, the U.S. had signed the statute but didn't ratify it. But that's, again, I think when looking at Venezuela, they're having a dispute with Iran as of yesterday or the day before, where Iran criticized Venezuela for its pro-American positions, and Venezuela summoned the Iranian ambassador to Venezuela. I think it was yesterday or the day before. And let's just sort of think back. Alex Saab was on his way to Iran when he was stopped in Cape Verde in June 2021. And they had long relationships, Venezuela and Iran. And Chavez was a good friend since 1999. And so these are things which are extremely important, standing up to the West. And Venezuela, with all its wavering in some things and certain internal weaknesses, which many of us know about and partly understand, they had a long relationship, and Venezuela was one in the forefront of standing up to the United States in Latin America. And Alex Saab, like some of us who are socialists, some people don't like businessmen, but countries, and I told you I'm speaking very humbly because I'm just someone sitting in Montreal and I don't have power and I haven't taken that many risks in my life, although I have taken some and I do stand up. But Alex Saab was a businessman who stood up for Venezuela, risks his life and his health to try and boycott, get around the U.S. sanctions. And that was a very important part of Venezuela's survival until the coup, since the American invasion. So this man is a hero, and Venezuela stood up for him, and they got him back. And what's striking is that the new government, which is a new government, it's not the old government, it's a new government with the vice president following the U.S., had cut off oil to Cuba. Apparently, they're giving a bit back now. I don't know, but all about it. They turned over Alex Saab, saying he wasn't Venezuelan, because in fact, I think he was Colombian, was he not? And yes. I mean, that's just, what kind of excuse is that to offer to this man? And what kind of public statement by the government, the new government, U.S. pro-U.S. government of Venezuela? And that's just, it's so disappointing to the entire world, to all of Latin America, to all the Venezuelan people who fought and fought for Alex Saab. And this gets into what actually happened in Venezuela, and I don't know all the details. I certainly don't know. I know they killed 32 Cuban bodyguards, and they kidnapped a president, which is unthinkable. But the new leaders, unfortunately, have just accepted this to be the representative, the proxy for the United States. The United States is now the oil, and people say maybe it's not that good oil, but I think they're going to, it's the richest oil field in the world, and now the U.S. controls it, and they will profit from it. And when you mentioned about this being a debate among the left, I'll challenge you a little bit in a friendly manner. I think there's no debate, really, and we should not be duped into thinking the new government represents the Venezuelan people. No, it represents the U.S., and it's playing a double game, and it's obviously representing U.S. interests. And I say humbly because I'm sitting here in my office in Montreal, but I think we have to tell things as they are. And we can be sad because we are sad. We must. I'm sad because of all the great things they've been doing and all the efforts they did and all the struggles that Mr. Chavez went through. And he attempted a coup d'etat in 1992. I remember it because I was on a Latin American lawyers organization. I was secretary general of it. And I remember the Chavez attempted coup in 1992 and thinking that was pretty exciting. And then in 2002, when they had a coup d'etat against him and he got back, quite an exciting event. Ironically, that weekend, I was in Brussels meeting the family of President Habyarimana, who had suffered a coup and had been assassinated on April 6, 1994. And we were watching the television, watching Chavez with the family who suffered a coup. The world is changing so fast. It's unhealthy to generalize, but the U.S., they put so much pressure on Venezuela, and they must have spent a lot of money. I don't know who paid off who, or whether people were paid off, or whether it was just done by the military operation. There's many stories going around about that. I don't want to even comment on them. It's a real setback, and the people are suffering. But one of the tragic things that we are seeing now is the giving Alex Saab to the U.S.
Yeah, well, you might say, as per the controversy on the left side of the spectrum, because, yes, things are changing fast, and it's only been since, 7 months and some now that this the overthrow and kidnap of Maduro took place, people were willing to give the acting pro tem president, Delcy Rodriguez, the benefit of the doubt. But as time has dragged on and one policy after the other being enacted by the temporary government, then it is becoming more clear of what you say, and that that the debate is dwindling and becoming moot. Well, you might even say right now that the Venezuelan government is using its mechanisms in the service of interests unrelated to justice and the people it claims to protect.
Sure. Well, the IDF was there. They had this tragic earthquake, and the IDF went there for 3 weeks and helped earthquake relief. The IDF, one of the worst armies in the world, historically in the world, went to Venezuela to help, and they accepted it. They had cut off relations with Israel, I think it's since 2009.
No, I think even earlier with Chavez. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Philpott. John's a Montreal-based defense attorney in international criminal law. He's been long active in the Palestinian and African struggle for peace. John, too, took part in the Free Meng Wanzhou campaign here in this country, in Canada, when that executive of Huawei was detained extra-legally, I guess I would say. And he's been involved in Alex Saab's first detention, torture, and extradition to America to face so-called American justice. About Alex again now, what John, do you know about the conditions of not only his confinement, but also that of Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores?
I'm now speaking to you about this, not having fully researched the issue. I will tell you what I have read, subject to being wrong if I'm wrong. But Maduro and his wife are in solitary confinement. They had a court appearance, I think, on the 22nd, but I could be wrong on the date. And they're being defended. And we read that the case against them is very weak. And there was a demonstration in support of him. I understand that Delcy Rodriguez, who stood by Maduro for a long time, has now said, well, the Maduro time is over. I'm pretty sure that's what she said about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Alex Saab, I do not know his conditions. His conditions were quite difficult before he was transferred, before he was released to go back to Venezuela 2 years ago. I could be wrong on the dates, but about 2 years ago. So it's really an example of the U.S., by all its dishonest and lying and power, use of power, army, money, all those things together, has taken over another country. Let's pray that the people can reorganize, and given the weakness of the U.S., in general, can turn things around and become more independent. There's a comment which, before I saw my interview, planned my interview with you, comparing countries like North Korea, Iran, standing up to the U.S., compared to Latin America, with the history of coup d'etat and it happened when I was relatively young in Chile, and then of course they had in 1965 in the Dominican Republic, and Haiti in 1917, and many, many U.S. And the Nicaragua in the 30s. But one of the problems which Latin America faces is that it has been the discourse about democracy only has a certain validity. Of course, democracy where the people participate is very important, but discipline and military power seem to be the only way to ultimate victory. And we have seen Iran, with 40 years or so of planning, has now been able to stand up to, and I would posit, hopefully have defeated the United States. That's not totally decided, but it looks in that. So the events of Venezuela will, of necessity, provide some guidance to future political change in Latin America. And again, I'm saying, I don't like to talk about myself, but I say this humbly because I'm not telling people what to do. I'm observing the difficulties and Fidel Castro took force power by the force of arms and maintained his army very strong. He beat the Americans in the Bay of Pigs, and so this direction can help Latin America, this problem, develop a strategy which will allow them to win. We see all these elections being. It appears that the election in Colombia was rigged. That's what the president says. They have seemed to have rigged the elections in Peru, Bolivia, and I'm not speaking with all the details. This is something which we have to, when we talk about it, we have to support it with facts, and I haven't, obviously, not prepared to argue those facts now, although I'm pretty aware of them. The fragility of Chile's elections, the terrible situation in Argentina, the risks in Brazil, although luckily and happily the left is in power. So there's a lot of thinking that has to be done and a lot of development has to be done in Latin America to break loose from the U.S. domination, especially since the U.S. seems to be focusing, says they're going to focus on the Americas, although they're fighting in Western Asia pretty hard. And they're so... that I said a lot in one sentence, or two sentences, but...
You may not have evidence, but it's clear that the Americans have been meddling. That much is clear to anybody who listens to the news, and in the elections in all those places, and now in Brazil as well, with especially this president coming out before elections and shortly before elections, not only in the places you mentioned, but Ecuador and Honduras and El Salvador, and backing certain candidates, let alone with all the fooling around with systems and so forth, these computer systems that tally and tabulate. But there's also, in the case of Alex Saab, when acting president Delcy Rodriguez deported him, she did so because in the constitution in Venezuela, they're not allowed to extradite citizens. And so she stripped him of his citizenship. Yes, he's Colombian, but he does possess Venezuelan citizenship granted to him. He's served as a minister in the government. He's acted courageously and heroically, as you outlined, in the interests of the government. He votes in elections himself. He is in all manner a citizen, but that was disregarded. And so he was called Colombian so that they could deport him more easily, at least off the ground. And yes, Biden did issue a pardon. I'm looking at his page right now.
Thank you.
And he says, be it known that this day I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President of the United States, et cetera, grant unto Alex Nane Saab Morin a full pardon for those offenses charged in the indictment, blah, 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 blah. So I wonder if it's the same charges that the Americans hope to bring up, or some kind of recycling of the same charges, unfounded, I would argue, against Alex Saab. It is some kind of double jeopardy, but it doesn't seem that the legal constraints really matter in this case. When you're arguing, John, about the efficacy or perhaps necessity of armed struggle, as if I'm taking your meaning.
Yes.
You're on thin ice in Canada right now with the passing of Bill C-9 and other so-called anti-terrorism laws. Before we go, we've only got a few minutes left, John. I wonder if you have a comment on these laws that the Carney government has shoehorned into effect right before the summer recess. And what they mean for people like you and me and others in the media that would find themselves charged, as one young man in Toronto has, with belonging to or supporting proscribed organizations like Hamas or others.
The threats to free speech are stronger and stronger, and Trump has really acted against free speech. Canada is trying, and this man in Toronto, who was charged 3-4 days ago, I've been trying to find out what he said, because I'm a defense lawyer and I like to think about, not that I want to defend him particularly, but I would like to find out what he actually said, because the supporting terrorism, it's the law is very indirect on how this interpretation, how this can be interpreted as a support for terrorism, and I haven't seen what he said. I wouldn't be surprised if the prosecutor was in for a rough ride on this one. Even my own advocacy, I didn't advocate armed struggle. I'm saying that they have to learn how to do it. And we don't know. Fidel Castro was a hero. and he took the power by arms. He wasn't a terrorist. He was with the people. And that's the kind of defense we have to make when we talk about it, just like the Sandinistas took power in 1978 in Nicaragua. But this is the right to free speech is extremely important to understand, because it's like here we live in Canada, right? To understand what's happening, what is happening in Iran, to understand what is happening in Venezuela, for example, you have to study and speak about these things. I'm on the board of Just Peace Advocates. We're a serious small organization for civil rights and anti-war. And we get consulted, and I get consulted as a lawyer. Often it's not really that legal, but people say, well, what can I do? What can I do? And what I say to them is exercise your rights. Stand up. I had people who wear a pin, a Palestinian pin, and work in a hospital in Montreal, and they were scared. I said, go to your union. The union will defend you. Exert your rights. I wear a Palestinian keffiyeh sometimes. And I had lunch with some French African friends last week, and they said, you couldn't wear that in France, but we can wear it in Montreal. I can wear a keffiyeh, and there's no...
Well, for now you can.
We have to continue doing it.
Well, Ahmad Hassan, Haj Ahmad, is the young guy that's been arrested in Toronto. His lawyer is Mohammed El Rashidi. He contests the charges against him and says not only in their own words, the charges don't even correlate with terrorism charges, and yet that's what he's being charged with for now. There's also a publication ban, so say the Toronto Police Service. I've been trying to find out what exactly that publication ban is, because I don't want to say something like right now on the radio and find myself charged with aiding and abetting Hamas or some such thing. But this seems to be where we're going. John, can you repeat Just Peace Advocates? How do people get a hold of them and find out more?
We have a website, and the person who's most active in it is Karen Rodman in Ontario. I can be reached. I have a website in my name, John Philpott, attorney of John Philpott Avocat. I'm not doing publicity for my own personal business, which I do have a business of legal business, but we can certainly consult, deal with people, help people. And many of us are involved in defending, in our work of defending Palestinians who are charged with greater or minor offenses. Particularly, I work in Quebec, of course. Good friends of mine work in Ontario. The legal forums are very important, because unlike some people, I don't reject the legal forums. We have relative, how can I say, anything you, when you make a general statement, someone says you're wrong. But we can get a fair deal sometimes in our court system. We have to fight for truth.
And without the courts and without jurisprudence, where are we? I mean, we as faulted as they are and biased as claimed to be, but by some like the ICC is accused of, without it, we're really sunk. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on. I'm going to talk to Eve Engler, a former client of yours, or maybe even current.
Still my client.
Current client. Yeah, that's good to keep that line of communication open with Eve.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Ahmad's case and other things too after the break. Thanks a lot for coming on. And again,
wonderful.
Go to John's site,
nice
johnphilpott.com. Till the next time, then, John.
Bye bye.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
He grew up in Argentina, became a doctor, but it wasn't long before he was a fighter for the rights of people to live well, to be the empire's death knell. He was in Guatemala in the days when Arbenz was overthrown by the CIA. He spent his life in struggle for a free America.